This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 20th of September, 2022. Markets bouncing back a little bit ahead of tomorrow's FOMC meeting. I tried little intraday lows yesterday, but sentiment improving a bit. It's, you know, what are we supposed to take out of this move in terms of information value? Probably not much. I think the key is our support and resistance lines. So the resistance finding being found there around 39.20, which is that 61.8% level, at least for the December future. On slide two, you can see for the S&P 500. And the next area, that 38.20 area, is the last residual Fibonacci area. And also on the cash, that would be around 3,800. So that's a key area. I don't know if we have much to slice and dice in terms of the market internals, Peter, but we're really waiting for this latest signal. It's interesting to see the market as well, trying to deal with this two-year pushing on the 4% handle for the first time for the cycle.
It's incredible for even you to talk about 4%. I think it's such a new world. To me, what happened yesterday, we had an incredible bounce back. So the S&P 500 futures rallied 1.9% from the intraday lows to the close. There was no real news or new news. To me, it really feels a little bit like a move, a positioning, just like going into the action hold back in August and the CPI print earlier this month. This is really a market that is betting and hoping for some good news and a tilt and a surprise to the upside. The big question is whether the Fed, the FOMC, will deliver that. I'll let you talk about that in a few seconds, John. But otherwise, I would mention that, you know, it was a very odd session yesterday. You had cybersecurity doing very well. Travel continued to do well. You didn't have the bubble stocks were actually quite weak, and that's because of that interest rate angle. And just wanted to mention before you go to the FOMC talk, John, that I just find it so hilarious that you have Elon Musk and Cathie Wood having this little chit-chat back and forth on Twitter, both arguing and agreeing with each other, sort of that Larry Summers is totally wrong on his analogy on the 70s, and we shouldn't use analogies, and he will drive the Biden administration and the Fed into a very, very bad situation and hike interest rates too much. And I think it's sad we have come to this place where, you know, these two, they don't have that much, I think, credibility in talking about macro. And to me, they're just really talking that book. And I think it really underscores how much under pressure a lot of these technology and growth companies really are.
Yeah, I think for their view to prove correct, we need to find a very abundant and very cheap source of very high intensity energy. So until they come up with that, I'm not exactly on the same page either. I'm not going to do a full FOMC preview today. I just wanted to give a sense of where the market is. And there's this, you know, it's being thrown around so much, this idea of 75 versus 100 basis points. I don't really think that's the point. I'd be a bit surprised if they go 100 basis points. I think it's possible. I don't want to write off any scenario. I do think they want to keep on the hawkish side of where the market expectations are, but I think they do that better by guiding the 2023 rates and maybe in the accompanying projections. Let's recall this will be the next quarterly refresh of the dot plot forecast and of the economic projections. And because it is the switch to the September meeting, we get the first forecast for 2025. So a new year is added to the mix. And I put on slide three, just pointing out, we're going to talk about that 4% handle. We've gotten there rather suddenly, to say the least. We're at 3.95% is where we've peaked out here over the last session or so on the two-year yield. And if you look at the dot plot, so what I did is I put the dot plot from the June meeting, where the dot plot itself, of course, showing where the Fed was forecasting rates. And in blue, you're seeing where the market was forecasting rates back then, which was very slightly above for the median for this year, and then way below, actually, for next year, the market predicting that it is much more clever than the Fed, that the economy won't be able to take these high rates and will be rolling over, and the Fed will actually be easing at some point after peaking out in early 2023. The red dots show where the market is now. So directionally, it's still somewhat the same. Of course, we have much higher rate, terminal rate priced, and far less, and then the peak coming around 4.5% next year and then rolling over into year end. So the market is still kind of predicting the same scenario. It's just taken the amplitude higher and put out further into the future where the Fed is seen rolling over. I think if the Fed is pretty aggressive and marks that 2023 forecast of 5%, let's say, That would be sending the market a message. But we'll do some more tomorrow as well with where they might forecast the PCE, et cetera. But just interesting, I think, to see where the market is vis-a-vis the Fed forecast going into tomorrow. And then, Peter, you've put up a chart here of the NAHB, and we can look at the trajectory here locally. So yes, it fell again, and it's a remarkably negative trajectory. But we have to remember where we came from, and then just perspective on absolute levels. We spent from 2008 to 2011, so essentially 3 years at sub 20 reading. So 46, we're sort of mid-range here, really.
Yeah, and there are two things to be said. I mean, I agree with you that an initial move down necessarily doesn't need to have a massive impact. I think it's a longer term average on this index that really tears and wears down the consumer and the well-being and the feeling of having home equity wealth in the US. But the reason why I'm putting it up is just we have had a little bit of discussion internally in the team back and forth. How much should we put a weight on this housing market? And I was just pulling an analysis Anders and I did quantitatively where we looked at different a lot of different macro variables to see what type of macro indicators actually can best explain the variations we have observed since 1994 on the forward earnings yield in the S&P 500. And this is not an exact science, but it gives you sort of an indication what actually moves the market's valuation around. And I have put, and you can see here on slide four in the lower right-hand corner, there are actually the eight most important factors in this nonlinear random forest model. And you can see that the most significant one was actually the NAHB over this entire period. So, but I agree with you. Every new event, John, is always unique. So how much weight to put it? But I think the housing market, it does play a pretty large role in the economy. But to what extent it impacts the market and the valuation, we don't know yet. I think it's a very dynamic thing, but I just wanted to put it out there that I don't think we can dismiss it outright.
No, it's a very good leading indicator, I think, also because as yields ratchet higher, that is obviously a very yield sensitive sector, and that's going to feel the pain the first, and that it propagates through. So it's more leading indicator than, for example, something like employment, which is notoriously lagging. All right, we need to jump over the commodities market. We're still wondering what's going to happen with natural gas, of course, for the cycle in Europe. But a bit of an odd session in crude oil, to say the least, but I'm not sure if you're pulling any information or value out of what's happened yesterday.
No, I think the only thing, the information we can pull out of the market is that the market hasn't got a clue right now. We've got low liquidity and lack of direction, and it looks most of all for now that oil is just a risk on and off assets. We had a $7 round trip yesterday, dropping four only to rally three, and that rally was I think coincided with the recovery had in the stock market. So this seems to be where the market is taking its cues from. So we have that band of support below where we're continuing to find some support coming in. Refinery margins this recently has come down, but seems like they're picking up a little bit again. Gasoline's the margins, basically the profit that's made on refining a crude oil into gasoline has dropped almost back to zero in Europe. Obviously an indication of slowing consumer demand also heading into the autumn, but generally just a chart saying that we're in a downtrend, but at the same time the market is really struggling to find the right theme right now. And then stay on the energy. You mentioned gas, John, and the gas prices are coming down. They've come down further today. Several factors driving it. I think one thing is overall is interesting is that it really feels like talking to people in Asia, talking to people in Middle East, that most of these people have just basically expect it's going to be lights out for Europe. And I think they are probably pretty going to be pretty much wrong on that front. But what we're seeing right now in terms of actually supporting Europe is the fact that gas prices are coming down. The storage levels has reached 86% of full. So we're above the 5-year average. We are currently 16.5 billion cubic meters above the level we had this time last year. That corresponds a current rate of import around 30 days of import additional that we have in storage compared to this time last year. So the storage level had really been cranked up quite significantly, obviously at a huge cost, but it does raise the or lower the temperature a little bit in the market. And I think also what we're finding, I would say across Europe, at least in Denmark, and I'm sure that's going to be replicated around Europe. Everyone is basically now looking at how can they cut back their gas demand, how can they cut back their electricity demand because the price is just simply so expensive. And I think with that in mind, we're probably going to see a bigger drop off in gas demand than the market is probably even anticipating at this point. Yeah. At the same time, where politicians obviously are trying to support this situation as well. So generally, I'm fairly optimistic. The only thing that can put a spanner in the works is a very, very cold winter into January and February. But let's look for a normal winter. And with that in mind, I think we're going to scrape through.
Well, what about you talk about the winter, and we've seen with these high prices concerned about fertilizer use into the cycle next year, and how that's going to affect yields. Is there any expression of concern in the forward curve for ags, or is this just something we're going to have to wait and see, weather, et cetera, next year?
I think it's a wait and see, but it's most certainly a challenge for the coming season. We're going to see some of that already now in the South American planting and growing season, which is underway. I actually just put in the agricultural sector chart here. This is the Bloomberg Commodity Index, and you can see we've been in an uptrend since that steep correction back in April to July. And right now we're just challenging the downside of that uptrend. But there is some a bit of post harvest pressure simply because the unknowns are now more or less known. But stock levels are low. The stronger dollar is obviously adding some headwinds to commodities priced in dollars. But generally the fertilizer story is not going to go away. Together with La Nina, together with the still high cost for gasoline or diesel to get your tractors in the fields, it seems like a market where we have to get used to higher prices for longer.
Yeah, I'm guessing that the spring next year is going to be very interesting for watching weather. Let me round out the foreign exchange space. So it's interesting to see this week with all these central banks we have meeting, all the expectations for 75 basis point moves and some talk of 100 basis point moves. And just a couple minutes while we're here live, the Riksbank is about to announce its rate hike today. So I'm looking for 75, some for 100. I'm not sure the 100 impresses even in the case of the Riksbank, because Swedish krona is more about the direction of risk sentiment and the economic outlook for the EU. But of course, it could surprise you intraday. I think one factor leaning potentially, and here I'm doing the analysis, we'll have a live announcement before the end of the podcast is out here, would be that the exchange rate is pinned close to the lows of the cycle in Euro stocky, that 1080 plus area. And then in dollar stocky, we're getting close to within a couple of percent of the basically the all-time high in dollar Swedish krona from back around 2001. Just above 11. Just a little focus here on slide 5 with the overview. We have a very strong euro here. If you look broadly speaking, a strong Swiss franc. The dollar strength is fair to middling recently. But an interesting distraction, if you look at something like Aussie Kiwi, which is breaking a massive range. This is something I've been looking for, the potential for it to do so with the tremendous divergences in the current account developments for those two countries in recent quarters. The market is feeling comfortable with taking it above the range despite a nominally dovish RBA minutes overnight. So that's an interesting signal there. Trading 113 plus for the first time since 2016. And there's only about a figure more of range left for the levels since 2013. And this is a pair that has traded north of 135 at times back in the 2011 timeframe. So I think there's plenty of room for a pretty significant repricing there. A possible interesting subplot in otherwise mostly obsessive dollar focus. Also out overnight, we had some strong CPI figures out of Japan, but the dollar yen just not moving. I think traders want to see what happens with U.S. yields on the other side of the FOMC meeting, particularly whether a hawkish Fed sort of unseats where we are with the longer end of the curve and that 3.5% level, for example, on the U.S. 10-year is broken. I think that would really... In your space, Peter, certainly affect confidence in the equity market if we do see 3.5% plus on the 10-year. But besides that, where's your focus today in the equity market?
Yeah, the focus. I just got a thought when you said it's funny because the 10-year yield is the one that is used to when you do your equity models on valuation of companies. But actually, in the model we showed on slide 4, it's actually the two-year yield in the U.S. that is actually driving the changes in the valuation. I just think that discrepancy is quite an interesting one to think a little bit about. But coming back to slide 9, stocks to watch today. So we have had, there's only one meaningful earnings release today, and that's from Haleon. It's a UK-based consumer health company. One of the brands, I use it myself, is the Aquafresh. So it gives you a sort of an idea. So the toothpaste gives you an idea of what type of company this is. They deliver better than expected first half results on the operating income side, and that momentum, they said, has continued into Q3. But I think companies like Haleon, they deliver consumer staples products, and that is very robust in terms of demand. Then Moderna and BioNTech was down yesterday 7% and 9%. The Biden administration officially declared that the pandemic is over, following other countries, I think, here in Europe. And that means basically lower demand for COVID vaccines, because we'll probably move to a state where, just like with the influenza season, that you only vaccinate very high-risk parts of the population. And here in Denmark, we have declared that that starts from the age of 50. So clearly, against recent expectations from Moderna and BioNTech, we saw that pop in the equity price over the past couple of months that have been completely eradicated. And we're now trading at some of the lowest lows for over a year. And if we move to slide 10, the earnings calendar. Again, as we mentioned yesterday, tomorrow's key focus is Lennar, the rising yields. We talked about that. We're going into an FOMC. What a coincidence that they will report on the same day as the FOMC. And then we had that worse than expected in NHB. Yeah, the backdrop is not looking very rosy for Lennar. So let's see what they say on the orders and the backlog, etc., when they report tomorrow. And I think that takes us to the macro calendar. So we've had, you mentioned that, John, we had the Sweden Riksbank. They already reported while
Yeah,
we were
we're
talking.
trying distracting the heck out of you while you're talking, but when I looking at his phone, yeah, so they moved 100 basis points, and I'm wondering if that currency angle was the reason they did so. Initial reaction, Euro Stoxx taking decently below 1075 after trading 1080 plus this morning, and they're going to continue to hike rates, they say in the statement. Of course, we'll have to see how that holds into the end of the day, but an interesting setup to see. Could you see in the same week the Riksbank outdoing the Fed on its rate moves? I think that would be interesting. Maybe I've got it wrong on the 100 basis points. My main point is that we need to take where the 2023 is going higher to get a hawkish surprise from the Fed. But of course, they could do that, the Fed, with the 100 basis point move. They've taken pains at the June meeting, if we recall back, to get Nick Timiraos of the Wall Street Journal to leak to him that they were going to move by 75 basis points. There seemed a desperation to do that ahead of the meeting so they didn't have to surprise. I wonder, after that Jackson Hole speech, if we've gotten to a Fed that doesn't care about surprising the market, even on the hawkish side. So that would be a behavior change, and I think the market might be a bit unsettled. So they really do want to surprise the market. They should go ahead and go 100 basis points. But I'm talking myself in circles on that. Today we have housing starts and building permits in the U.S. Of course, these are going to start to or continue to slow down as we see this drastically slowing U.S. housing market. The impact of that hits with a massive delay. FOMC meeting tomorrow, no secret there. The big set of other four central banks, starting with the Bank of Japan, that one potentially extremely interesting and almost interesting anyway you slice it. If they continue to stand pat and indicate absolutely no intent to shift on their policy, that is just as big a signal, depending on what the FOMC does, as any sort of wobbling indication on their commitment to yield curve control, etc. The SNB in Switzerland, 75 basis points expected there. Norges Bank only expected 50. I wonder if they need to get on the same page as everywhere else. They've been very slow and ponderous with their rate cycle moves. Bank of England supposedly split on the decision. If the Bank of England doesn't go 75 basis points, Houston, we have a problem, or London, we have a problem. So I'm interested to see that one as well. But we'll take it a day at a time here as we get through the rest of this very interesting week ahead. And stay careful out there, and we'll be back with the Saxo Market Call tomorrow.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.